This particular games, we're making a commitment to Indigenous, Asian and Pacific people, all areas that have not been represented at previous games.
Exactly. I think it's a great opportunity to meet people from all over the place.
And a chance to be with other hot and sweaty women.
Feel you shining through.
Climbing around a rocky beach, or feeling like a twink on a Chelsea street.
I've been waiting to leave, I've been waiting for the love, I've been waiting for the man I believe I'm worthy of.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A queer-supportive archbishop is picked to lead global Anglicans. Women warm up for Gay Games 2002 in Sydney, and harmony, philosophy, and fun denote this month's audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 27th, 2002. The next leader of the 70 million member Global Anglican Communion will be the gay-supportive Archbishop of Wales, Dr. Rowan Williams, the British government announced this week. The appointment of the next Archbishop of Canterbury was welcomed by Britain's lesbian and gay Christian movement, whose General Secretary, Reverend Richard Kirker, said, "Under his leadership, homophobia will be challenged and intolerance rooted out." That's a far cry from the exiting Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. George Carey, who will hand over the Anglican primacy to Williams at the end of October. He barely acknowledged gay and lesbian Anglicans despite years of internal lobbying and some dramatic public protests. In early July, in response to a Canadian diocese decision to celebrate gay and lesbian union ceremonies, Carey wrote a letter to all Anglican bishops declaring that homosexual relationships are incompatible with the Bible.
Williams, by contrast, is believed to have knowingly ordained a priest who was in a gay relationship, despite the Anglican requirement of celibacy for gay and lesbian priests. He was quoted earlier this year as saying that it wasn't his job to be going around the bedroom with a magnifying glass doing surveillance, and that it wasn't necessary for gay and lesbian priests to be celibate in every imaginable circumstance. However, Duke University theologian Stanley Hauerwas described Williams' views on homosexuality as very disciplined, saying, "He's not pro-gay, but he knows gays whom he respects and whom he would ordain." Hauerwas was one of a number of observers who emphasized that Williams is not a liberal, but an orthodox Christian, despite his support for gay clergy and women bishops. Williams' perceived support of gays and lesbians has stirred considerable concern among conservative Anglicans who dominate the church in Asia and Africa. Kenya's Anglican leader, Archbishop David Gitari, issued a statement warning that African Anglicans would be disappointed if Williams supports gay and lesbian union ceremonies, which they find totally unacceptable. Gitari said their position has not changed since the 1998 Decennial World Conference of Anglican Bishops, where a series of anti-gay resolutions were passed by overwhelming majorities.
Blocking recognition of same-gender relationships was also a major concern this week for another leading African cleric, Roman Catholic Cardinal Francis Arinze of Nigeria, who could well be the next pope. Speaking at a Toronto celebration of the church's World Youth Day, he called on young Catholics to work against gay and lesbian marriage, saying, "That is not progress, it is decadence." He said that had anyone attempted such a thing in Old Testament times, the earth would have opened and swallowed them without a trace, and that while that hasn't occurred more recently, that does not mean nothing will happen to them in the long run. He also remarked that no one has ever died of chastity, but some have contracted disease because they offended against chastity. Similar remarks were also made at the Toronto World Youth Day observances by Boston's Cardinal Bernard Law, who has become notorious recently for his alleged mishandling of sexual abuse of minors by priests under his authority.
South Africa's highest court this week looked more kindly on gay and lesbian couples. The full bench of the Constitutional Court upheld a ruling of the Pretoria High Court that it's unconstitutional to deny spousal benefits to same-gender partners. South Africa's 1996 constitution was the first in the world to explicitly prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. The case before the court was that of lesbian judge Kathy Satchwell, whose Pretoria High Court victory was appealed by the state. The Constitutional Court ordered a rewrite of two sections of the Judges Remuneration and Conditions of Employment Act to add after the word spouse the phrase or partner in a permanent same-sex life partnership in which partners have undertaken reciprocal duties of support. In Satchwell's case, the evidence of reciprocal support included joint purchase of the partner's home, naming each other in wills, and Satchwell listing her partner, Leslie Carnelli, as beneficiary of her insurance and investment policies and as a dependent in her health plan. The ruling offers hope for an upcoming lawsuit seeking equal marriage rights for same-gender couples in South Africa.
In Britain, the Brighton and Hove City Council this week gave final approval to creating a partnership register for unmarried couples, including gay and lesbian couples. The registry is purely ceremonial, carrying no legal benefits. Similar registries have already been established in London and Manchester. Like Manchester, in order to avoid possible legal problems, Brighton and Hove will be using the company's civil ceremonies to provide the registry service, as well as non-religious heterosexual marriages, renewals of marriage vows, and baby naming ceremonies. The first Brighton and Hove couples will register in October.
In the U.S., courts outside Vermont are refusing to deal with that state's pioneering civil unions, which extend all the state-level benefits of marriage to gay and lesbian couples. This week, a Connecticut appeals court refused to dissolve a gay male couple's Vermont civil union, finding that Connecticut family relations law doesn't cover same-gender partnerships. That creates a quandary for the now-estranged couple, Glenn Rosengarten of Connecticut and Peter Downs of New York, because even though Vermont will certify civil unions for non-residents, it won't dissolve them unless at least one partner is a Vermont resident. Vermont has dissolved only six of the more than 4,200 civil unions contracted since the state law went into effect in mid-1999.
In mid-July, the Georgia State Supreme Court refused to take up a lesbian's bid for visitation with her children that was based on the hope a Vermont civil union would qualify her partner as a spouse. Susan Freer hasn't seen her three sons in 2 years, as her ex-husband's custody agreement prohibits them from spending the night with her if someone other than a spouse or blood relative is present. Her appeal cited the U.S. Constitution's Full Faith and Credit Clause, which requires states to honor each other's legal actions. Georgia's highest court dismissed the appeal in a single sentence, saying, "Even if Vermont had purported to legalize same-sex marriages, such would not be recognized in Georgia."
And even the man who signed Vermont's civil unions into law, Democratic governor and 2004 presidential hopeful Howard Dean, this week told a national television audience that he wouldn't push for federal recognition of gay and lesbian couples. Asked on NBC's Meet the Press, "Would you be in favor of a national law approving of civil unions for gay couples?" Dean responded, "Absolutely not. I believe each state has to come to grips with civil rights. I think that gay and lesbian people are entitled to the same legal and civil rights that everybody else has, but think that every state has to come to grips with that in its own way. We did civil unions. Maybe other states want to do it in some other way, and they should be free to do so."
Some South Korean activists don't want marriage, forced heterosexual marriage, that is. This week, four groups launched a new coalition, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Korea, to work for LGBT civil rights. The organizations involved are the gay group Chingusai, the lesbian group Kiri Kiri, the gay website Another Love, and the lesbian website Safe Zone. Their joint manifesto included the statement, "The narrow concept of a family forcing a patriarchal marriage on individuals is denying the sexual minorities' rights." It added that laws on youth protection still designate homosexuality as harmful to minors, something which has served as an excuse for government censorship. In addition to those reforms, the coalition seeks official recognition of transgenders' chosen identities and an end to discrimination against people with HIV.
A civil rights coalition of five groups in Hong Kong this week made an official complaint to the Equal Opportunities Commission about discriminatory sex crime laws. Hong Kong law provides for a possible life sentence for anal intercourse between men if one is under age 21, but does not criminalize the same act for a heterosexual couple. Activist Tommy Chen said men are arrested and convicted every year under the law, although he was not aware of any having actually received the life sentence. Hong Kong's government issued a statement in defense of the law, declaring that men under 21 lack the maturity to decide to engage in homosexual acts, and that older men are vulnerable to extortion by young partners. The commission is consulting its legal counsel regarding the complaint.
And finally, congratulations are due to Lexington, Kentucky gay couple Michael Meehan and Thomas Dysars. This week, with the help of a surrogate mother and in vitro fertilization, they became the proud fathers of quadruplets, three boys and a girl. These may be the first quads in the U.S. to result from that technology, although a lesbian couple in Pennsylvania had quads by artificial insemination several years ago. The Kentucky births came about 9 weeks early, but the mother and babies are all in good condition. The men had originally planned on only one child, but on learning there were five fetuses, it was a struggle for them to agree to the termination of one to allow the other four to survive. Dysars called the infants the most beautiful thing in the world, but inevitably they mean major lifestyle changes for the men. They're trading in their Corvette for a Chevy Suburban, for one, and they're resigning themselves to an estimated 13,000 diaper changes over the next couple years.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending July 27th, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Greg Gordon. Coming up later in the program, various flavors of folk, urban, soul, and acoustic are on the musical menu in this month's Audiophile. And in a moment, when it comes to the Sydney 2002 Gay Games 6 Sport and Cultural Festival, the Women's Advisory Committee isn't just playing around. Don't touch that cursor.
This is Patricia Nell Warren. If you are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered, or just not sure, you are not alone. Many of us have questions about our sexuality. At the Gay and Lesbian National Hotline, their trained and compassionate volunteers can help provide you with free and confidential telephone peer counseling or information and resources. Call the Gay and Lesbian National Hotline toll-free at 1-888-THE-GLNH. That's 1-888-843-4564. Whether you need to talk about some confusing feelings, need health information, or just need to find out about a local resource in your area, the hotline can help. Call at 1-888-843-4564. The Gay and Lesbian National Hotline. It helps connect our community one person at a time.
Ensuring that women are fairly represented at all levels of organization and participation has been a key feature in the evolution of LGBT politics. Gender parity is one of the aims of Gay Games 2002, being held in Sydney, Australia in early November, and the Women's Advisory Committee has been working hard to achieve that goal. To find out how the numbers are shaping up and to learn what other aspects are involved in maximizing lesbian participation at the Games, reporter Uma Ka'ali Shakti chats with Women's Advisory Committee Chairperson Anne Mitchell.
Tell us a bit about the committee.
Well, we were set up at the time when we won the actual bid to host the Games, Uma, and our idea was to think of policies and then strategies to make sure that we got as many women there as possible, and our target was to get 50% of women participating, because we thought that was a great goal. I think in Amsterdam they had just in the 40s, and we thought we should aim for 50.
And I know that countries like Aotearoa New Zealand, yay for us Kiwis, that we're actually almost 60% women.
That's right, they're the highest number so far, the Kiwis.
And how are the Aussies doing?
The Aussies are doing fine. They're creeping up to the mid-40s at the moment, so we're in our last moments of trying to get a few more from home here. We are a little disappointed in England and some parts of Europe and Canada and the US, but again, I think there are some last-minute registrations happening, and that's what we're hoping for, to boost their numbers.
What a wonderful opportunity for all you dykes out there, especially the ones who are unattached at the moment and available.
I think so. They'll probably be looking forward to some of the social and cultural events we'll be having, no doubt, Uma.
There's been lots of the different fundraisers throughout.
Yes, we've been trying all different sorts of ways to get some more money so that we can make sure that there's plenty of childcare facilities, and so that even we can boost the scholarships to get people out from other countries.
Right. Now, tell us a little bit more about the scholarship program.
Well, what we've been trying to do is get people from Asia and the Pacific in particular to come and join us, and sometimes it's very difficult for them, but some of the ones from poorer parts of Africa and Europe and so on to come here. And of course, Australia being so far away, it is a very costly business if you've got to get a flight out. But with the help of Qantas, we're hoping to get some travel scholarships organised. And then for those where we can't help with travel, we're certainly helping with the entry fee and seeing that they're paid that through the scholarship system.
This particular Games, we're making a commitment to Indigenous, Asian and Pacific people, all areas that have not been represented at previous Games.
That's right.
And I know that we've got almost 200 approximately Aboriginal people coming, that there's about 20 people coming from Fiji, there's about 20 coming from Samoa, and about 18 from Tonga, not to mention, of course, a huge crowd of people coming from Aotearoa New Zealand, of which there'll be a number that will be Māori and Pacific Island.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's going to give it a lovely atmosphere and flavour to have those people, because we do belong to that part of the world, and of course from our own Aborigines, we'd love to see them in the forefront somehow at this time.
Yes, so there'll be lots of Indigenous people, and there'll be obviously within that lots of really exciting women from all kinds of places.
Exactly. I think it's a great opportunity to meet people from all over the place.
And a chance to get to be with other hot and sweaty women.
Women, no, for sure. I think
as we play games, as we've been saying, come and play with us.
Yeah, I think the Let's Get Physical physique show might be one of those things that'll appeal to a lot of people if they really want to see the bodies.
Well, there's 31 sports that people can take part in, and then there's a huge program of cultural events.
Yeah, I think the cultural events are going to be great. I've already booked for Sing Out to the World. That's the choirs. I think there's 15 international choirs coming, Uma. That's on the 7th of November, so I'm really looking forward to that.
There's that. And then there's also, not to forget, that really important seven conferences that are happening.
Yes, yes, the conferences, all sorts of interesting topics for people to discuss. And sometimes we don't have the opportunity to discuss those sort of issues with people, you know, from other countries and to see what they're experiencing.
One of the conferences I'm particularly interested in is the First Cultures Conference, where they're actually going to be looking at sexualities pre- and post-colonisation, and we will have people from our own culture speaking about our own cultures and not just researchers.
Yeah, that's great. That's
and
what
that will expand everyone's knowledge on sexuality. Yeah. We're always trying to find out what was it like before and what were the kinds of things. And in some countries, you don't have just two genders. You have a number of different what are identified as genders, and it's not necessarily based on your genitals.
That's right. I think it is going to be a time where it is open to all those, as you say, no matter what gender or classification we might put upon people, but it'll be a time for everybody to find something that suits them and to really learn about each other.
One of the things I'm particularly proud of is the gender statement that we've got for this Games, to enable so many people from different parts of the world, however they identify their genders, and that it was very strongly supported by the Women's Committee.
That's right. The Women's Committee said, yes, we'll have transsexuals, we'll have people who feel they want to be in the women's events, we're happy to accept them, and I think that's really important.
And we're one of the few countries, Western countries, that has, as women, has embraced the idea of our brothers and sisters, however they want to identify, being able to play, because the games, after all, are about personal best and inclusion.
That's right, yeah. So it's going to be a fun time to see how it all works out, I think, and certainly there's going to be some experiences that we'll be able to talk about for a long while, I'm sure.
That was Sydney Gay Games 2000 Women's Advisory Committee Chairperson Anne Mitchell speaking with correspondent Uma Kaalishakti. As the July 31st registration deadline approached, the number of athletes who'd already signed up exceeded the competitors who participated in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. Opening ceremonies of the Sydney 2002 Gay Games 6 Sport and Cultural Festival are scheduled for November 2nd at Aussie Stadium. For more information about the Gay Games and the cultural festival and several issue-oriented conferences that accompany the sporting event, you can visit their website at www.sydney2002.org.au.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine.
Thank you.
That was without cue cards, people.
For the latest and best in queer music, nobody has their ears tuned into the scene like This Way Out's audiophile team. Their picks this month come from an established lesbian duo and two emerging gay soloists.
Feel you shining through. The rising moon traces the lines of you.
Those are the gorgeous harmonies of Tammy Greenstein and Doris Muramatsu, and together they make up The Garden Verge. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. Their CD is called Shadow of a Habit.
Tammy Greenstein tells us about their style.
The Garden Verge calls its music urban folk, and that's sort of to distinguish it from an earlier kind of folk that came, I guess, in the 60s. And also, you know, we do live in the city, and I feel like there's an edge to our music, and so, you know, we wanted to get that across somehow.
And when I lifted my head off the pillow every morning, I would know just what to do. But my love, you know, you can't be sure that I'm the one you're looking for.
Find out more about The Garden Verge and their CD, Shadow of a Habit, at www.gardenverge.com.
Jeremy Blue's debut CD is called Embracing This, and it's a blend of acoustic soul and folk.
More than a city has inside, more than an ocean has of wide, more than a dreamer has to hide. It's just me, I don't know where I've been. Maybe hugging the moon and being kissed by stars, or dancing naked in a park, or climbing around a rocky beach, or feeling like a twink on a Chelsea street.
Jeremy's lyrics have a soul-searching edge to them as he explores his different sides.
I find that there's a tenderness that runs through the CD, a real desire and yearning to really become aware of where it is that I've been and what it is that my experience of life is and where I'm leading, and most importantly, where I am right now.
Maybe it was the fourth grade when I brought home my first card of straight A's. And I love the way my family looked at me. I love the way they knew I wouldn't be just some guy you'd see at the laundromat sometime, or you'd meet at the corner store waiting in line, or see driving a beat up car. Now I'd be so much more than just some guy.
You can learn more about Jeremy Blue and his CD Embracing This at www.jeremyblue.com.
From Martha's Vineyard, Kenny Lockwood brings us his debut CD called Tin Angel. And he's another artist whose lyrics reflect his life.
Mind you, I don't walk around in my life, you know, holding up a flag that says I'm gay, but I think that it's part of myself, it's who I am, and I'm not going to hide that, certainly not going to hide that in the music that I write, because what I'm searching for is truth in the music that I write.
I'm looking at the stars in the clear October skies. I don't need to ask the question or even wonder why. Joy, waiting for the pain. I've been waiting to leave. I've been waiting.
Kenny Lockwood's ballads have a way of lifting your spirits while nourishing your mind.
I'm tired of the rules, you know, man. Pack my bag. It's gonna be alright, and I'm raising up my spirit for my tin angel tonight. For my tin angel.
Find out more about Kenny Lockwood and Tin Angel at www.kennylockwood.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 429, Sunland, California, 91041, or by visiting our brand new website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Keep me close. Keep me close, baby. From the edge of this storm. Let me lay my head on your feet. Till angel keep me warm. Till angel keep me warm.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Cindy Friedman, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Umar Kaalish Akhti, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to Michael Schembri. Sweet Honey and the Rock performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Arcus Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To find out how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KZSC Santa Cruz, California, WCBN Ann Arbor, Michigan, KOPN Columbia, Missouri, and on more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.